This episode is brought to you by WordPress. Imagine the millions of people every day that go online to search for a local business. Would your small business show up in a search? When you create a website on WordPress.com, you make it a lot easier for your customers to find you, to connect with you, to hear how you can help them. Your business needs an online home. It needs a WordPress.com website. One of the best things about WordPress is that you don't need experience to set up a website. You'll be guided through the process from start to finish. WordPress will take care of all the technical stuff, so it's easy for you to get your site up and running. If you do need assistance, their customer support team is made up of experts, eager to help you out and get the most out of your site. And they're available to help 24 hours a day, Monday through Friday, and also weekends. WordPress plans start at just $4 per month, and all of these plans include a custom domain name for the life of the plan. Take a look and see why 28% of all websites run on WordPress. And so to get started today, with a 15% off any new plan purchase, go to wordpress.com/felon to create your website and find the plan that's right for you. That's wordpress.com/felon for 15% off your brand new website. wordpress.com/felon.
This episode of Felon may contain disturbing content, including descriptions of violence and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
My list. Who will be my number three? The possibilities are endless. Some satanic faggot, some horny faggot, some sexy prostitute, male or female, not anyone in particular. I'll kill anyone who gets in my way. Who will be my number three? David O'Hearn, Frank Arkell, the first. Who else? One is the best. You always remember your first. Who's next? Two weeks after the brutal death of David O'Hearn, investigators had seemed to reach an end to their leads. It would take another murder to help get their investigation back on track. On the 27th of June, 1998, authorities were alerted of a disturbing discovery. A house cleaner had called them in a panic after attending the home of a client. Upon entering the residence, they were greeted by a bloody mess. A man was lying on his back, lifeless, in the middle of a large pool of blood. 68-year-old Frank Arkell lived alone in his Reserve Street residence in the city of Wollongong. The adjoining garage of his residence had been converted to a granny flat. It was while entering the granny flat that the cleaner came across his body. As was the case with David O'Hearn, it appeared that Frank's body had received extensive trauma. He was lying with legs outstretched and wearing tracksuit pants and a white singlet. His face was stained heavily with blood, almost to the point of being unrecognizable. His head had received multiple blows with severe force from a blunt implement. Three tie pins had been stuck into his face, one in his left cheek and one in each eye. A splinter of timber was embedded in his throat. A leather belt was wrapped around his neck, as was an electrical cord from a lamp. In total, there were 34 injuries to the head region. The top, the back, and left side all showed lacerations. Cartilage and muscle were exposed through wounds to the right upper ear, the left eyebrow, the area below the left ear, the bridge of the nose, the right forehead, the area above the right eyebrow, both lips, the left side of the mouth, and the left side of the cheeks and chin were all significantly lacerated. Frank Arkell's teeth and ribs had been fractured, and his left jugular vein was punctured. A broken lampshade was found near his body, and it seemed to investigators that this, in combination with strangulation, was the means by which the offender had killed Frank Arkell. As was the case with David O'Hearn, the sadistic mutilation had occurred after death. Forensic investigators again went to work, hoping to find any sign of evidence that would point them in the direction of the offender. As investigators scoured the residence, the glass sliding door, which was the only access point to the living area, and a plastic lunchbox that contained tie pins, were taken back to the lab for an analysis. It was hoped that the offender had touched the door upon entry, and that when they had collected the tie pins to pierce Frank Arkell's face, they had handled the plastic container without gloves. Both items produced clear prints, but they were unable to be matched to the prints found on the wine decanter at the David O'Hearn murder, or to any prints on police files. This lack of match did not rule out being the same offender. It meant that the prints could have been from different sections of the hands. But a more significant find was that along with these items, police also located a pair of black and white tracksuit pants and tan hiking boots that had been spattered with blood. It appeared that the offender changed out of them and left the scene when they had fled. So similar were each of the crime scenes, police continued with the assumption that the same person was responsible for both. It seemed now it may be the work of a serial killer. Frank Arkell was a former mayor of Wollongong. At the time of the attack, he had been a high-profile character in the city. This notoriety was not for his status as former mayor, but rather, he had been implicated by a number of accusers as someone who had sexually abused children and young men. Just over a year before his death, Frank Arkell had been arrested and charged for sexual offences against young boys and was due to stand trial in September of 1998. This opened up a range of potential suspects for police, and they went about questioning those who were his alleged victims. After an extensive and thorough interview process, all were dismissed as persons of interest, and police went back to the evidence that they had on hand. Based on the similarities of the crime scenes, police then looked at the similarities between the two victims, and the only thing that they had in common was that they were both gay. Much to the distress of David O'Hearn's family, the media used this link to speculate about the two men being acquainted with each other, and soon, accusations of the pair being involved together in a pedophile network soon graced the headlines. But with the background check into David's past, leaving no stone unturned, police ruled out this connection, and there wasn't a shred of evidence to suggest that David O'Hearn was guilty of anything of this nature. Two items of evidence that stood as a glimmer of hope were the pants and boots, located in Frank Arkell's residence. Both had been spattered in blood. The pants had been left on the floor inside out, suggesting they had been removed in the same location. They were Nike brand, black with a thick white stripe down the side. These pants seemed to be unlike anything else Frank Arkell had in his wardrobe. The boots were tan Colorado brand, and again, they were unlike anything Frank Arkell would wear, and most significantly, 2.5 sizes bigger than Frank's shoes. With this discovery, it was made apparent that in order for the killer to leave the premises, they would have had to wear a pair of Frank's pants. In his home, Frank had a number of matching tracksuit tops and bottoms, and of these sets, a plain black pair of tracksuit pants were missing. Based on the information they had, police went about trying to track down the owner of the pants and boots. Shoe shops that stocked Colorado boots in the area were contacted. Police even went so far to check purchase records and chase up those in the area who had purchased them. All credit card payments were traced to the owners, and police went about locating and interviewing them. Again, they failed to gain any further leads. The next plan was to make an appeal to the public as to whether anyone had seen an individual who had worn these pants and boots together. But police would not have any luck until 3 months after the death of Frank Arkell. It was then they received a tip-off that they had been waiting for, and this break in the case would lead them back to one of the strongest leads they had in the beginning of the investigation. It would lead them back to the home of the person who had been the number one suspect, Keith Schreiber. A woman had contacted Crime Stoppers after recognizing the pants and boots combination on TV. She claimed that her ex-boyfriend had regularly worn the same Nike pants with Colorado brand boots. She went on to state that he had suddenly stopped wearing both the pants and boots. At the time, this prompted her to ask about their whereabouts, to which she alleged he became defensive and argumentative. These claims started to ring alarm bells for investigators, but even more significant was the fact that around the same time, her boyfriend had started to keep newspaper clippings in a scrapbook. These clippings all related to the David O'Hearn and Frank Arkell murders. After receiving the identity of this individual, police recognized the name instantly. They had met him before, in the home of Keith Schreiber. When detectives had swooped on Schreiber's home, they were greeted by his housemate, who had welcomed them in and allowed them to inspect Keith's room. This housemate was identified as 19-year-old Mark Van Crevel. Van Crevel was quickly put under intense surveillance. Police, knowing at this point they needed more evidence for an arrest, but also feared letting him out of their sight in case he was the murderer and he decided to strike again. In surveillance footage and photos, Mark Van Crevel was regularly seen moving around town and hanging out with friends. Among these friends was Keith Schreiber. Schreiber had been dismissed as a person of interest when his boss and housemate Mark had acted as alibis. As part of being an alibi for Keith, both his boss and Van Crevel had attended the police station and had signed a typed statement testifying to Keith's whereabouts at the time of David O'Hearn's murder. This statement was kept in a plastic sleeve and filed away. At the time it was filed, police thought nothing more of it. But now, it took a whole new level of importance. The idea was suggested that now that Mark Van Crevel was a person of interest, they could try to obtain fingerprints from the document and attempt to match them with those found at the two murder scenes. The document was quickly located and taken to the lab. During an analysis, it was dipped in a liquid chemical solution called ninhydrin. If there was a presence of amino acid from a fingerprint, the solution would react with it and hopefully reveal the prints in the form of a purple stain. Police waited anxiously for the result. Slowly, some purple began to appear, and a glimmer of hope came in the form of a full set of fingerprints. With this set of prints, a comparison to the prints found at both murder sites was conducted. The prints found on the paper, signed by Mark Van Crevel, matched both. As excited as they were about this find, police still needed to be patient. In order to arrest Van Crevel, they needed to be able to prove that the prints on the document were in fact his. They continued their close surveillance of Van Crevel, one for the safety of the public, and two to hopefully obtain evidence that would allow them to take him into custody. A detective following Van Crevel one day spotted him drinking from a Coke bottle and discarding it in a public bin. This bottle was collected and taken to the lab for analysis. After finding prints and comparing them to those in the document, it was determined that they were a match. Police now knew that they had their man and that they could make an arrest. After a 4-month investigation, they made preparations to bring him in. But in a bizarre twist, Mark Van Crevel would not need to be arrested. Around this time, Van Crevel felt the need to confide in his Taekwondo instructor, and he spoke to him one-on-one in the office of his training hall. Mark shared with his instructor that he had done something bad. After some stalling, he shared, "You know those murders in the paper? I did them." Using his standing as a mentor for Mark, he convinced him that he needed to hand himself in to police. And with this, they made their way to Wollongong Police Station. On Wednesday, the 30th of September, now in police custody, Mark Van Crevel made a shocking confession to the murder and mutilation of David O'Hearn and Frank Arkell.
"I don't know anything much about David himself, but I murdered him. I don't know much about him. I didn't know him as a person."
Well, can you tell me, say, your movements for that day?
The video camera rolled. Detectives listened in shock as this quiet teenager recounted every shocking detail.
"I had in my mind that I wanted to kill someone that day. I was really angry and I said to myself, I could kill someone."
Around 6 p.m. on Friday, the 12th of June, 1998, Mark approached the home of David O'Hearn and knocked on the door. At the time, Mark was living with Keith Schreiber, who lived on the same street as David. When David answered the door, Mark inquired as to whether there was any accommodation available that he knew of. David, who was not one to turn away someone in need, invited him in to discuss the matter. The two sat in the lounge room together as Mark shared a fictional account of his need for somewhere to stay. David offered Mark a drink and made his way to the kitchen. But just as David turned his back to walk away, Mark picked up a wine decanter from a table and brought it smashing down on the back of David's head. David collapsed forward from the force of the blow, and Mark continued to use the decanter to rain down blow after blow, repeatedly striking David on the back of the head. It was then that Mark went to the kitchen to retrieve a number of tools. Searching a cupboard above the fridge, Mark found a hacksaw and a hammer. He also collected knives from a drawer, along with a razor and corkscrew. These were then used to mutilate and dismember David's body. He used a knife to cut open David's stomach. He removed David's head and placed it in the kitchen sink. David's hand was then used to smear satanic symbols across the walls and mirror.
I just looked at his body for, I don't know, just a couple of minutes, just looked at seeing what I'd done.
Is there any reason why you did it?
Why I killed David Owen? Yeah. I was like, not really. I mean, I was angry that day, but no particular reason, no.
When questioned over his motivations for the killing, Mark Van Crevel could offer little more than that he was angry and he felt like he had to kill someone. When questioned as to where he came across satanic images and ideas, he replied, "Just from the music I used to listen to." During his recorded interview and a walkthrough of the crime scene, Mark gave very specific details about the crime that only the killer would know. When questioned about the murder of Frank Arkell, Mark shared with police that he believed Frank to be a convicted pedophile and that this was his motivation for wanting to murder him. As part of his plan to kill Frank Arkell, Mark called Frank from a payphone under the alias of John. During this call, posing as John, he shared with Frank that he was gay and asked if he could stop by for a visit with the premise of a romantic encounter. He made his way to Frank's home and Frank invited him in. But when Frank's back was turned, Mark pushed him from behind and rammed his head into a cupboard door. This then caused Frank to fall to the ground. And when Frank was lying on the ground, Mark proceeded to kick him repeatedly in the face with his hiking boots. He then picked up a lamp and tried to strangle Frank with the cord. After his attempt at strangling him, Mark then used the lamp base as a baton and swung it at Frank's head repeatedly. Mark, who was now covered in Frank's blood, removed his pants and boots and changed into a pair of Frank's tracksuit pants. Just as he did at David O'Hearn's home, Mark stayed at the crime scene for some time. He collected a container of tie pins from a bedroom cupboard and inserted them into Frank's eyes and cheek before walking from Frank's home and leaving by car at approximately 3 a.m.
What made you angry?
I don't know, some stress, I guess.
What type of stress?
Oh, I just stress out a lot.
To relieve the stress you were under, you went out and did this?
Yeah.
When asked as to why he felt the need to turn himself in and to make a full confession, Mark replied, "I feel it's the right thing to do, and I had to get the shit off my chest." When pressed further as to why he made the decision to kill Frank Arkell, Mark replied, "I didn't like him. I know it wasn't for me to take it into my hands, but I felt someone should have killed him." Despite this confession, combined with the vivid description of the crime scene, police still needed to secure all the evidence they could in the off chance that Mark's admissions would not be accepted in court. They applied for search warrants and attended the home of Mark's father, Jack Van Crevel, where Mark still had a room. In a black zip-up case, police located a Nike jacket that matched the bloody pants found at Frank Arkell's home. They also found the black track pants that had belonged to Frank and that had been worn to leave the crime scene. A hostel where Mark was currently living was also searched. Here they located a gold chain with a cross pendant that had belonged to David O'Hearn. Along with this chain, they also located a book titled The A to Z of Serial Killers. Inside the front cover, in Mark Van Crevel's handwriting was written, "My list. Who will be my number three? The possibilities are endless. Some satanic faggot, some horny faggot, some sexy prostitute, male or female, not anyone in particular. I'll kill anyone who gets in my way. Who will be my number three? David O'Hearn, Frank Arkell, the first. Who else? One is the best. You always remember your first. Who's next?" Mark Van Crevel stood trial in Wollongong Court. He was charged with 2 counts of murder, to which, upon the presentation of the indictment, he pleaded not guilty to murder, but guilty to manslaughter. During the trial, Mark's account of the attacks on the two men varied from the first confession that he gave to police. His claim was that both men had propositioned him, and this had caused him to snap. He shared with the court that this trigger was brought about by years of sexual abuse at the hands of his father. But this new account of how both attacks unfolded was at odds with the evidence found at the scene. In the case of David O'Hearn, Mark claimed that David had removed his pants and propositioned him, and it was at this point that Mark struck him with the wine decanter. But a review of the evidence indicated the blood spatter pattern found on the denim jeans that David O'Hearn was wearing conflicted with this account. After a review of the evidence and witness statements from psychologists, the jury rejected Mark's revised account of the events, and he was found guilty on both counts of murder. Mark Van Crevel was sentenced to imprisonment for life. Thanks for listening. This episode was made possible by WordPress. To take us out, I've got a couple of trailers from 2 Australian podcasts that I've been listening to. One is Bloody Murder, and the second is a new one called True Crime Storytime. Please do check them out.
Do you like your true crime stories served fresh with a splash of gallows humour?
You stinking bastard.
Do you want chills and thrills and gruesome details?
Ah!
Oh, don't do that, Barney.
Hi, I'm Barney Black.
And I'm Tara Saravan. We make Bloody Murder.
Indeed. It's a weekly true crime podcast focusing on lesser-known serial killers and crime stories from Australia.
And around the globe. The kind of stuff that you're very unlikely to hear about anywhere else.
Bloody Murder is available on iTunes, Stitcher.
And pretty much everywhere.
I'm Casey.
And I'm Samantha.
And we're the hosts of True Crime Storytime, a podcast for all things true crime.
We will be bringing you fortnightly episodes covering everything from murder and mysteries, disappearances, theft and fraud,
abductions and kidnappings, and more importantly, trying to take a lesson away from each case, because every story has a message.